All right, that ends our pre-range talks, and now we go straight to Q&A, and I'm going to start with Elizabeth. That was a terrific explanation of that novella. I have a question. Why do you think she waited 21 years to write this novella? Why did she have to... why do you think there was such a delay in analyzing the importance or the implication of the disease on herself and her lover?
I think that we see this happen in art a lot, right? It takes a lot of time sometimes for an experience to be digested by the mind, by the subconscious mind and the conscious mind. I think some of it depends on perspective. Right now, we don't know where we are in the story, and certainly right after it, Porter didn't either, right? Was it going to come back? You know, was 1922 going to see a resurgence of it, right? So I think that you need to sort of know where you are in the arc of the story before you can write about it. And I think that was true for Porter. I think also, and this was true for a lot of writers, they had a hard time. The war was what seemed important, and it was difficult, and it even felt disloyal for a lot of writers to write about a pandemic when the war was so fresh. There's a lot of reasons for it, but I think those are a few of them in terms of the delay. We see it a lot with art that there needs to be a sort of seed time before it emerges.
Well, Nancy, you were talking about how the disease was, you know, forgotten and very quickly, and that's consistent with this deferment in dealing with it in literature. How do you think about this concept of putting it under the rug and forgetting about it, moving ahead with the delay, Porter's personal delay, and maybe other aspects of literature not getting into the subject?
No, I think it's a really interesting point that it does take some time to process, especially as Elizabeth suggested, I think, for art. One of the things that's so interesting here, and actually I want to ask Elizabeth, I've got a question that's sort of pushing at me, which is this question about uncertainty, which is just what you were saying, Elizabeth, about part of what they're dealing with in the aftermath is they don't know when it's over, right? It's not like a war where you sign an armistice. Did you have the sense, Elizabeth, that uncertainty is one really important piece of this experience? I kept thinking about each thing you were saying, like reality is shifting so fast, and part of that is this uncertainty about what is to come, the suffering of the body, you don't know when it will end, the contagion, I mean, again and again. Is uncertainty an important piece of what Porter also helps us understand?
Absolutely, right? And the pain of that, right? The pain of that uncertainty and the anxiety and the stress that it causes, which really sort of brings us full circle back around to Barbara, right? Like sort of what is it that we can control? But I think that's also it weaves its way into the forgetting, in that some of the literature that I discuss sort of encodes the pandemic in a way that represents the uncertainty, right, and represents the way it lived on and kind of embodies and in subterraneously, and that means that it's hard to see, but it also captures the way that it was hard to see, right? If that makes sense.
What seems peculiar about the novella is in the beginning, where the protagonist is confused. She's like hallucinogenic. She doesn't really understand what's going on around her. There's this sense of questioning the very reality of what's going on. It reminds me of some of Virginia Woolf's work, for example, just the absolute confusion of like what's real and what's fake. And we've heard from others who've had COVID that they dream poorly, that the high temperatures result in a lot of confusion, that their mind is playing games with them. Is there something about, you know, this sort of disease that do you think that Porter had what she remembered most from her experience in her high fevers was this hallucinogenic effect, and that's kind of like almost the core of the piece?
Yes, I think that's exactly right, and I think it overlaps with Virginia Woolf's work. She caught the flu, with T.S. Eliot's work, with W.B. Yeats's work. this sort of sense of a delirium and a dreamlike landscape and confusion and all of these fragments, and that you can't quite put it all together, all speaking to memories and experiences of fever and delirium. You have half a billion people catching the flu. I mean, so that means that this experience is hugely widespread, and so I think Porter's drawing right on that, and then asking her reader to be plunged in immediately. So when my students read Pale Horse, Pale Rider, and they start that confusing sort of dreamlike landscape that makes no sense at the beginning, yeah, you know, Porter is asking the readers to be like, yeah, you think it makes no sense? Yeah, right on. That's exactly it. That was the experience.
You know, it takes her 20 years, and in that 20-year period, a Second World War starts. So she's writing this just at about the time when, you know, the Germans invade Poland in 1939. Mm-hmm. That being said, also 1939 was the release of Gone with the Wind, and Gone with the Wind was the most popular novel. It was, you know, top of the bestseller list, 1936, 1937. This is the number one film in the country. And that's a story of another woman in the context of another war going on around her. How do you think about Gone with the Wind and Pale Horse, Pale Rider? Is that something you've thought about at all as part of your intra-war year thoughts on literature?
I probably earn a lot of enemies here, but Gone with the Wind is a deeply problematic novel in a whole range of ways, and certainly, especially racially. And I think that it allowed a kind of, I think it's really popular in that it allows a kind of fantasy of a narrative that sort of a sort of myth that you can sort of place over this incredibly difficult period of history, and tell it as this story of someone experiencing difficulties, but then sort of, you know, pledging to triumph at the end. But a much more kind of simplistic view of the world, and I think that, you know, Porter's story would run somewhat counter to that, and counter to a narrative of war that would be simplifying. I haven't really put them into
no problem. We try a different tack. So another thing that distinguishes COVID and the flu of 1918 was the flu of 19 was most deadly to the 18 to 25 year old cohort, where in the current experience it's mostly deadly to people who are elderly and with comorbidities. The first one, the 1918 flu, killed the healthy, and this disease kills the sick. How do we think about that in terms of why maybe the Porter's view is why it seems so unfair? Here were these young people ready to start their lives, fully energetic. Adam comes across the male protagonist in this story as full of life and full of strength, worried about bullets, not so much worried about disease or physical problems away from a bullet. How do you think about strength being a weakness?
I think it was one of the real haunting qualities of 1918. And I think, though, I think that it's key to remember that at the time, I mean, Adam does seem incredibly healthy, but they also know that his body represents a kind of dead body, right? That young men of precisely this age group were dying in unbelievably high numbers, right? So that the pandemic didn't change really it changed the gender of who was dying, but not the age group. And so I think that it meant that it seemed like this. I mean, some people felt like the pandemic was some sort of gender equalizer, that all these young men were dying, so now we had a pandemic that was going to kill all these young women in the same age group. But I think one of the dangers here between then and now is to borrow a term from Judith Butler, grievability, right? That this sort of insidious sense that some deaths are more grievable, right? And this can go along racial lines, it can go along economic lines, and we see this in some of Chris's work, right? But that this notion that somehow it's worse that because they're young people, right? Or it's better because it's elderly people now and sick people, that this notion that there is some way that we could grieve, that deaths can be grieved differently depending on the category, I think is one of those things that we need to really work on and correct, right? To think of whole categories of people as less grievable is something that is troubling, right? Troubling then, troubling now.
And did you, one of the other strange aspects of the short story is her grief towards Adam. It's a little bizarre. In some ways, there is no immediate grief, and it just seems to be sort of a long-term haunting grief. What do you make of her feelings about the process, and does it reflect maybe her own, the author's own feelings of grief towards the loss of her loved one?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's complicated because the biographical details of the story do not match up to Porter's own experiences. Though she did nearly die of the virus. Adams, I know some accounts say that he's a real figure, but he seems to be imaginary. But this grief, I think that she captures at the end of that story a kind of the numbness, right? The kind of the shock and the numbness and the silence and the loss part of grief, that sort of shell shock for anyone who's lost a loved one, right, knows that sort of sense of being simply unmoored and stuck in a kind of void of silence, that kind of vertigo of it. And I think at the end of the story, she has that kind of numbness and shock and has to figure out, you know, how to completely live her life differently. So I think that at the end of it feels like shell shock to me at the end of the story, sort of how after a war and a pandemic can you go on in the face of that kind of loss.